Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Equine Muscle Massage Therapy. They do not have a website, but you can reach them at 631-862-1402. That's 631-862-1402. Our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Browdy, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what's up with you?
What's new is I'm cold. Back in a deep freeze. Well, the snow is over, but it's...
No, there's more snow coming.
Yeah, just a little bit, but it's all white outside. So I've got I see we have a visitor.
We have our mascot here, Revis. Come on over here, Revis, and take a seat at this.
I was reading this survey or this article yesterday, and it said, according to the Public Religion Research Institute, one in four people believe that God will decide who will win the Super Bowl.
The public religion.
Right. So, I mean, okay. And according to them... 53% of Americans and 56% of sports fans say that God rewards faithful athletes with success and good health. The thing that struck me was that they also go on to say that 2 weeks before the 2014 Super Bowl, half of American sports fans said they believed God or some supernatural force plays a big part in games. You know, it's interesting. So, I wonder for people that believe that there's this unseen force that plays a part, do they think it out? I mean, what do they think is occurring? Is it the power of thought? Like if I root for my team subconsciously or consciously, that will spur the team on. And if that's the case, what about all the people that are have intentions on the other side? Isn't it like a psi war going back and forth?
And that's why you never know who's going to win.
Yeah.
So could we go back to the question? Is it predetermined by God or some force, or is it just happenstance and may the best team win?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't personally believe that. I think the outcome is based upon the people playing the game and their ability. Not the people rooting, although I can't discount that. Look, home teams generally have a tremendous advantage in a lot of sports. It's the energy.
It supports the theory of the power of prayer.
Right. So who are we to say that it doesn't affect...
Right, so now let's take this thought. So we have this power of prayer that we think may or may not be working. Wouldn't it be great if somebody would say, wow, this is a wonderful research project, because if we can prove that the power of prayer really does work, then we can have a world of peace. All we need is everybody to pray for it at the same time.
Well, that's... You know, the global peace prayers that are out there, you know, work under that premise.
Okay, and isn't that what started religion to begin with? Was, wow, the power of prayer really works. Let's get everybody together once a week in this building and let's all do it.
Yeah. Well, to me, it never made any sense to believe in some, you know, deity, or God that was choosing the side of a football team, or for that matter, choosing a country in a war,
If you're going to accept the fact that everything is predetermined by some God or universal force, then you have to accept that the bad things are as well as the good things.
Correct.
You can't discriminate.
Yeah, and you know, being interested in sports all my life, I mean, I know that not only athletes, but a great many athletes are very superstitious. They have these rituals that they go through. I'd say athletes, gamblers, things are lucky, things are unlucky. You'll have an athlete sometimes that they'll say they won't shave until they lose, or they won't change their jersey while they're on a winning streak, things of that nature. So what are they really thinking? I mean, they just know, I've been winning and I've done this, so I'll do that again.
I'm going to wash my jersey and I'm going to keep wearing it because nobody will come near me on the field, so I'll be able to run with the ball all the way across. You can rationalize these.
I know, but I don't think there's any deep thought. I mean, they're not envisioning how this might occur. They're not contemplating what powers are to be. They just say, okay, this works. I'm just going to keep going. It's not because they believe that there's somebody higher that's rooting for them, or that the universe has something in store for them. It's just, ritual.
And how about when it stops working? What do they think about their lucky charm then?
Well, then my luck is
run out.
So it's the
true thinking of that we've seen in the gambling industry. You go into the casino and you're winning, and you have to keep going back because you're on a roll and you keep winning. And then when you lose, you have to go back because you're due for a win now.
Well,
you can rationalize anything any way you want.
I know. Listen, I've witnessed it myself. I've been in poker rooms and in casinos, and there are people that have not changed their shirt in 4 days. And then if you ask them, that's my lucky shirt. But we as a people are it's a superstitious society. So many people. Even, no matter what walks of life, professionals,
right,
educators.
Do you think that because deep down inside we know that there is some force, there is some universal force, and we're groping to connect to it, and so the most simplistic way is to have a lucky charm or to set up a situation where, okay, if this happens, then this is my lucky charm or this is the shirt that I have to keep wearing over and over again, is because we want to have that connection. And rather than taking the time to search for it and be a part of it, the easy way out is just to have a lucky shirt.
I also think sometimes it takes the pressure off. If you say, well, this is, I'm on a streak, or you say this is a team of destiny, or this is fated to happen. It takes, you're no longer responsible for your own actions. Some other force is taking over, so it's you have no decisions to make. So it's the easy. This didn't happen because it wasn't meant to happen. They don't talk about the steps you could have taken that might have made it happen.
Okay, but isn't that also the way they pump up the teams before a game? They have their huddle and they pump them up and they just say things that are not necessarily true, but that's how they're pumping them up.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, we were just talking about that before. I mean, the pumping up, energy. I mean, we've seen it in various, like seances and, physical mediumship and even in spiritual gatherings. It's all about, raising one's energy. So I guess that's a form of raising one's energy. But it's fascinating to me. But I just have to. It bothers me when I watch even our political leaders. Where they have to end every speech. Well, for instance, God bless the United States of America. Yeah, but
it's a prayer.
It's a prayer, but if there's a true God that's a God of all people, why would God not bless Brazil,
or the guy who's putting his finger on the nuclear switch to send a nuclear bomb over, why not?
Right.
We don't know who's getting the blessing.
Well, we're going to go to a break. We have a wonderful guest. When we come back, we'll hear more about these unseen forces in the world from our guest, Stephen Browdy. So stay tuned.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Browdy. Our sponsor is Equine Muscle Massage Therapy, and they can be found not on the web, but by phone at 631-862-1402. That's 631-862-1402. Bob?
And I have a nice long introduction for our next guest because we like him so much. Yay. Dr. Stephen Browdy is a philosopher and parapsychologist. He's past president of the Parapsychologists Association, editor-in-chief of the Journal of Scientific Exploration, emeritus professor of philosophy at the University of Maryland, and a member of the Scientific Advisory Board of Forever Family Foundation. He's the recipient of several grants and fellowships, including research fellowships from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Bial Foundation in Portugal. He's published more than 60 philosophical essays. He's written 6 books, and I'll read them: ESP and Psychokinesis, The Philosophical Examination, The Limits of Influence, Psychokinesis and the Philosophy of Science, First Person Plural, Multiple Personality and the Philosophy of Mind, Immortal Remains, the Evidence for Life After Death, The Gold Leaf Lady and Other Parapsychological Investigations, and his latest book, which we're going to talk about today, Crimes of Reason on Mind, Nature, and the Paranormal. Website to learn more, I'll give you his simple website, is jazzphilosopher.com, just the way it sounds. And yes, that's another thing that Dr. Browdy does. He's an accomplished jazz musician. Welcome, Stephen. Nice to have you with us again.
Nice to be here. It's always great to talk to you, and thanks for that introduction. If you ever want a gig as my agent, you know, have your people call my people.
Well, you know, is it the standard 10%, or do I get any more?
Vegas rates, it's 5%.
Well, you know, I must admit that although I'm learning more, my knowledge of philosophy was woefully inadequate. And I never really had a firm grasp on exactly what the heck philosophy was. So before we came on air, I actually looked it up, and I'm going to read this definition to see if you agree with it. It says, philosophy is the study of general and fundamental problems, such as those connected with reality, existence, knowledge, values, reason, mind, and language. Philosophy is distinguished from other ways of addressing such problems by its critical, generally systematic approach and its reliance on rational argument. So the part that intrigues me is the last part about reliance on rational argument, and it kind of hit me for the first time that the role that philosophy can play when we talk about investigations of psi phenomena, because frankly many of the discussions about psi phenomena and these non-local subjects involve irrational arguments. So can scientists and researchers improve their work by studying philosophy?
I wish it was that simple.
Yeah.
You know, I've been trying for years to engage my scientific colleagues in parapsychology to really argue systematically about the issues, or especially the areas where we disagree. I mean, I tend to formulate arguments and give my opponents clear targets. You know, I distinguish premises from conclusions. I try to bring my assumptions up to the surface so everything's exposed. And I haven't had much success, I have to say, in getting my interlocutors to do the same. So,
well,
I don't know.
Yeah. The advantage is that, you know, I mean, as a philosopher, I mean, you can certainly see both sides of every issue. And people don't know quite where you stand, because where you stand depends upon, you know, what logic and reason tells you. So,
well, sometimes it really is complicated, and I sometimes don't know myself where I stand.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the occupational hazards of being a philosopher. I do like to see things from all sides. And usually the truth is, or in many cases, the truth is more complex than we'd like it to be. Mm-hmm. Things aren't always as straightforward as they seem.
So let's talk a little bit about the new book. First, the title, Crimes of Reason. Like the title. So give us some thoughts of how you came up with that.
Well, it has a double meaning, actually. Yeah. On one hand, it refers... I'm getting some kind of feedback from you, so I don't know if you're talking to me or... what's happened?
Yeah, we'll see if we can clear that up. I mean, Fran will talk to the station here, but I am talking to you.
Oh. No, I meant, were you saying something while I was trying to say something?
I wasn't, no.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll ignore what I'm hearing.
Okay.
Good.
So, So crimes of reason means two things. On one hand, it refers to the sorts of charges that have been leveled against me for my research interests in parapsychology and dissociation. A lot of people just like to think that I'm flamingly irrational. And on the other hand, it refers to the egregious conceptual errors that I think many people in science and specifically in parapsychology commit in their theorizing about the nature of reality.
Mm.
And both really are themes of the book.
One of your essays in the book has to do with parapsychology and the nature of abilities. And one thing I wanted to ask you about is we hear this constantly. We get into discussions every week with people about whether such things as psychic ability or mediumship are natural abilities that are available to everyone, or are they skills that can be learned, or are they gifts that are given to only some people? What would you say? Is it all of these things?
I'd say we don't know, and that's one of the lingering huge mysteries about psychic phenomena. And one of the things that's irritated me so much about work in parapsychology, especially among those people who try to bring it into the lab and study it, is that the laboratory parapsychologists really haven't any idea what it is they're trying to bring into the lab and whether bringing it into the lab was inappropriate in the first place.
Mm.
I mean, there are all sorts of things that human beings do which would be inappropriate to study under controlled conditions. I mean, we know that penile erections occur, for example, but you can't study male penile erection under the cold scrutiny of laboratory scientists. And the same is true of the ability to produce witty remarks or the ability to return tennis serves. There are lots of human abilities and skills which really can only be examined properly in their natural setting. And even then, only under very special conditions. So until we have some decent idea what psi is doing in life, then we have no idea under what conditions it's even appropriate to study it in the lab, if it's appropriate at all.
You're right, and I know you point out in the book, so if you have someone that, as part of their normal life, exhibits strong intuitive ability on a consistent basis, and then we move them into a laboratory where we design protocol to test these abilities, these lab findings may not even be consistent with the abilities outside the lab. Is that a fair assessment?
I would say so.
Yeah.
There was a well-known British skeptic, C.E.M. Hansel, who in a BBC documentary on the nature of ESP many years ago said it should be very easy to find out if someone has telepathy. They just have to tell me what I'm thinking. And, I mean, I find that so breathtakingly stupid. I'm sorry that the interviewer from the BBC didn't say to him, really, Professor Hansel, let's see an erection. I'm sure that Hansel would have argued vociferously against the conclusion from his failure to exhibit an erection that he's simply unable to get it up.
Or maybe he, you know, there's two sides to that. You know, maybe he would have surprised you.
Well, then he has another career, but...
Yeah. So, I mean, and psi is an ability or whatever we want to call it that's varied and complex, and it's a real challenge. I think you made the point in the book that, you know, parapsychologists are criticized so often by other scientists, you know, who are always questioning their methodologies and their data, that they try to overcompensate. So they go the other way, and then they everything's based on replication, and then they try to take things as seriously as their colleagues, or more seriously. And this stuff a lot of times doesn't lend itself to replication, right? We're talking about spontaneous phenomena. So I mean,
right.
So
it's a problem also in psychology.
Yeah.
In regular psychology, it's what Sherry Turkle used to describe as physics envy. The idea that the only legitimate methodology is that of certain and only certain hard sciences or physical sciences. And actually, this emphasis on replicability is pretty absurd anyway, because it's not an essential process in the scientific method for even all physical sciences. You don't rely on it in cosmology. You don't rely on it in astronomy or geology. it's really just chemistry and physics primarily, maybe biomedical science to some extent.
So one of these research projects involving, you know, psi-related phenomena, they take samples of the general public, right, and they run these, they design this protocol, and then sometimes there's a, you know, it shows a slight variance with control groups, but it never made much sense to me. You just want to prove that it exists. So shouldn't they just be seeking out these superstars, the people that we know can do it out of, you know, with no question, and study them, and maybe we'd learn more about how they do it by examining people that are extraordinary.
Well, I don't think the situation is quite as bad now as it was at one time. I think the more sophisticated experimentalists in parapsychology at least know enough to run pilot studies initially and find promising subjects and then work with them for more formal studies. But I've been arguing for decades now that we really need to focus on people who seem to have some gift for this and some capacity for exhibiting the phenomena under more or less consistent conditions.
So what's more valuable, you know, laboratory investigation or field investigation?
Well, I'd say first of all, we already have enough proof, if you want to use that term, that the phenomena exists. We don't need to demonstrate it more. I mean, there are people who aren't going to believe it no matter how good the experimental evidence is. So I think the emphasis on experimental evidence just to demonstrate the mere existence of psi functioning, we've been there, done that. It's boring already. What would be nicer to do would be some sort of process-oriented work where we could get some handle on the nature of the phenomena. But the problem there is the one we've just been talking about. We don't know what it is we're bringing into the lab. And another element is what many people call the source of psi problem, and that is that there's no way in a psi experiment to really identify and control the myriad variables that could affect the outcome. I mean, there's a kind of unwritten assumption in most experiments in parapsychology that everybody involved in the experiment is going to adhere to a kind of idiotic gentleman's agreement where only the official subject will use only the psi ability being tested for and no other psi abilities that might be relevant or help, and that nobody else even remotely connected with the experiment will use their psi abilities for whatever purposes they find more urgent, and that the subject will use only the psi ability specified at the appropriate time, you know, when the experimenter's gun goes off, and neither before nor afterwards to affect the outcome. And there's no way to control for any of that.
No, and as you point out in some of your essays, I think we're not being unreasonable by calling into question the whole body of laboratory research. I'm not just talking about psi research, but medicine and physics, that there may be no such thing as a blind experiment. I mean, there's psi going on all over the place.
Well, I think that's the Pandora's box that many opponents of parapsychological research don't want to open. I mean, I think they may recognize in some corner of their mind that if we allow psi functioning into our view of things, it isn't going to be the sort of thing that happens only for parapsychologists and only when they set out to look for it. So as far as we know, if it's driven by motivations or deep needs and interests, it could be affecting even ordinary experiments in science where investigators are every bit as motivated and sometimes more so than parapsychological researchers, and where there might be a great consensus among researchers to be getting a certain kind of result.
Yeah, that's what they call the experimenter effect.
Yes, and we do know that there are experimenter expectancy effects in both behavioral and apparently in non-behavioral sciences as well. So who knows how far this reaches?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really messy about all this. And so another reason for looking at superstar or apparently superstar subjects is that if you've got these special individuals around whom things are occurring that are remarkable over and over and over, maybe not every time but a lot of the time, then you've at least got a reasonable guess as to who's responsible for what's happening when you study the person formally. I mean, it may not be the whole story. The other people involved may be adding or subtracting to the final result. But at least you have some kind of prima facie reason for saying that this person is actually doing something.
So, you know, we use the term psychokinesis and, you know, and PK, and some of the listeners, when they hear the term, what comes to mind to their mind is like psychokinesis is like something causing a pen to move across the room by power of thought, or a table levitating. But not all PK is observable. You know, so what are examples of the way unobservable PK might work, and the things that happen on the unconscious level?
Well, this is what I like to call sneaky psi or naughty psi. I mean, the way things can, way our psychic abilities might be a contributing factor to runs of good luck or bad luck. By the way, I have to say I heard part of your discussion early in the program about sports. I want you to know that I'm wearing my lucky sweatpants for this.
I would. I'm not surprised by that.
You know, I've often said to other parapsychologists that if you want to try to get a handle on the way psi works in life, I think a good way to begin, not the only way, but certainly one good way to begin, would be to study people who seem to be remarkably lucky or unlucky. And there really are such people. I mean, there's a Yiddish distinction between a shlemiel and a shlemazel. A shlemiel is someone who spills soup on himself, and a shlemazel has it spilled on him. So the idea is that shlemazels are unlucky souls, people the universe is crapping on, you know, people who are victims of impersonal forces of the universe at large. And they really exist. And as I believe you know, since you read the book, I actually lived next door. I was actually married to a shlemazel.
Yeah, right. I did mean that. Yeah.
But I lived next door to a pair of shlemazels, and I wish I now could find out whether they were shlemazels before they met and got married, since I think marriage can have a lot of destructive effects on relationships. But what's clear is that their life together as a married couple was a living hell of aggravations and annoyances. It seemed that almost everything they bought was defective. Electronic equipment would fail to work right out of the box. Their cars were always in the shop, even though they both had Hondas. They bought this solid wooden rocking chair, which broke the second day they had it with their infant son on it. And my favorite example of their schlemazelness, if that's even a word, is that the wife bought a poster-sized photograph of what she thought was the Golden Gate Bridge, and she had it framed and put on her living room wall. And I had to tell her, Donna, that's the Brooklyn Bridge. So here's a woman who both literally and figuratively bought the Brooklyn Bridge, which, you know...
I know,
your younger listeners might not know that's an old example of somebody who's a sucker. You know, somebody, hey, you want to buy the Brooklyn Bridge?
Right, and it would also be good to find out if they were schlemazels, you know, before you met them, so we can rule out the possibility that
that's right.
Started with, you know, moving next to you. You know,
that's right. We can rule that out.
You know, so in that case, your neighbor. Which also you pointed out, it's possible we can't dismiss the possibility that she was psychically punishing herself, you know, because of a negative self-image. She could have been arranging her life that way, thus appearing as a streak of constant bad luck.
Exactly right. I mean, there are all these possible causal lines, and there's no clear-cut way to unravel them. But once we allow the fact, and it seems to be a fact, that our psi functioning can be triggered by our deepest needs or desires or motivations, then as far as we know at the moment, almost anything goes. And
yeah.
We have no way of figuring it out.
So
it's very messy from a scientific point of view.
Yeah, it is fascinating to me about the, you know, this hidden, you know, PK, and that we always think in terms of sending positive intentions, but if we can do that, certainly the we could be sending negative and receiving negative thoughts from others. So it raises a whole lot of issues about the ills of the world, you know. So
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know of anything that can be used only for the good. And, you know, I find it odd that there are people who spend a lot of time worrying about praying for peace or for good results for somebody or other and don't take seriously the other side of the coin, which I think we have to. I mean, we all have nasty thoughts at some time or other, and who knows how many of those turn out to be parapsychologically efficacious. We have no idea.
True. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking more with Dr. Browdy about these unseen forces in our world, so stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Browdy. Our sponsor is Equine Muscle Massage Therapy, and they can be reached by phone at 631-862-1402. That's 631-862-1402. Now, before we get back to our show, I have a few foundation updates for our listeners. When you do shop on the Internet, keep Forever Family Foundation in mind. By doing one simple task when you shop, you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, and do that without sending us any money at all. Since many of us shop on Amazon using any of the Amazon links or book links on the Forever Family Foundation website, to take you to Amazon's site is the only step you need to take before you start shopping. This will result in a donation from Amazon to us based on a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? That's not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. Sign up and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Go ahead, it's free. And just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the Internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,500 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like Adidas and Cheap Tickets. How about drugstore.com or Home Depot? Snapfish? Maybe Zales. So please take a moment when you shop to show us that you care. Our Earth Day raffle is up. Our Earth Day raffle is up on the website, just waiting for your entries. You can win up to 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation mediums Lynn LeClaire, Renata Santarelli, Renee Buck, Amy Utzman, and Tracy Bray. The drawing is Earth Day, April 22nd. So get your entries in, as April will be here before you know it. And don't forget to mark your calendars for our annual Afterlife Exploration Retreat in Chester, Connecticut, this July 24th through 26th. Watch for announcements on the website, to our members only in our emails for early bird pricing, and in our brand new Signs of Life newsletter coming to a mailbox near you soon. And finally, Forever Family Foundation's signature cherry chocolates, handmade by Professor Paranormal at Haunted by Chocolate, makes a perfect gift for you, someone you love, or someone who has had a recent loss and would treasure this special gift from you. Chocolate is the food of the gods, is the food for a healthy heart, and we all know how chocolate helps heal the soul. Watch your emails for this special limited offer, or go to the website before February 8th to get your orders in. For all of our announcements, visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org. All the event links are there, the information and registrations for all the events. And if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Okay, Bob, back to you.
Okay, and we're back with Dr. Stephen Browdy. His latest book is called Crimes of Reason on Mind, Nature, and the Paranormal. And Stephen's website is jazzphilosopher.com. I wanted to ask you something before the break on the subject of savants, just to get your thoughts. I mean, a lot of people believe that the extraordinary abilities that some savants exhibit have psi explanations, that they can tap into fields of information through, you know, non-physical means. How do you think that mechanism works with savants?
I think we do. I mean, theories abound, of course, but I don't think we really know yet what makes a savant tick. And there are also different kinds of savant abilities, whether it's a calculating ability or
right,
which doesn't seem to be creative like some of the musical and artistic abilities that certain savants exhibit. So I think, first of all, it's hard to generalize. My interest in savants is coming from a somewhat different angle, because I think the empirical literature on survival of bodily death often takes for granted that some of the remarkable performances of people who seem to be demonstrating knowledge of past lives or the behaviors of certain mediums have to be explained in terms of survival of bodily death. I think that's a little premature, because we don't understand what's going on in the case of savants or prodigies. We don't have a real grasp of what human abilities of various kinds are, which is one of the reasons I wrote that chapter in the book on Psi and the Nature of Abilities. And until we get a handle on that, we really don't know what we're dealing with in particular cases of mediumship or reincarnation. It's not to say that they might not be providing evidence of survival of bodily death, but just that the inference that it can only be that is clearly premature.
I know that when discussing mediumship and channeling, you have written about what you call the usual suspects. So what are some of the usual suspects?
Well, the usual suspects, and I think they're very easy to rule out in the best of cases, were things like hidden memories or malobservation or misreporting, things like that. When we come to the next level of attacks on the evidence for survival, they would be what I call the unusual suspects. And there we have to think about various kinds of abnormal abilities, perhaps the kind of creativity that gets exhibited in dissociative states and multiple personality in particular. It's one of the reasons two of the chapters in my new book are about dissociation. And there, I mean, in those cases and in cases of savantism and prodigies as well, I think our ignorance is extensive. We really don't know what we're dealing with, and most of the people who write on survival know even less about that material than the people who work in those areas. And so one of my standard complaints about the serious scientific literature on survival is that it's empirically myopic. That is, the people who write about the evidence for survival don't really know the material on savants and prodigies and dissociation. And because of that, their theorizing about it all, I think, is at best quite naive.
You, Fran and I were talking a little bit, you know, before the show about PK. I mean, I know that you got started, one of the reasons you got started in these investigations to begin with was an experience that you had very early on, I guess in your college days, where you had, you were doing, I believe, table tilting. And
correct.
When Fran's question, what was your question exactly?
Oh, now you're going to ask me to remember?
Yeah. Well, you're talking about, you know, the PK, if we're talking about, let's say, poltergeist cases, you know, so recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, where things like a TV might fly across the room, it would seem to be some sort of intelligence, because how does this energy know to pick up a TV and move it? I think that was kind of where you were going.
That was where I was going.
But PK doesn't have any intelligence, does it?
Well, I mean, if it's directed by some kind of agent, whether it's living or deceased, and there are some intentions connected with that. I mean, you know, in the same way, we don't really understand how ESP is directed. When one of the great remote viewers from the days of Stargate at SRI is given geographical coordinates as binary numbers, and then gives the correct information about the target, how are we to explain that? We don't know exactly. I mean, the person probably, we can assume, doesn't even know what the geographical coordinates, if they were real numbers, would refer to. But as binary numbers, they would have even less to go on. So how do they get from those binary numbers, which they can't even properly interpret, to the actual target? We don't, I mean, there's all sorts of mysteries like that. We have no idea how it happens.
Yeah. We talked a little bit before, you know, the show about, you know, an article that a large percentage of people believe that, you know, that God plays a role in certain events. And I know you write a little bit about parapsychology and religion in the book, and that you make an interesting point that those who believe in a God often have their behavior kept in check because they believe that there are forces in play that are bigger than they are. But you also make the observation that many who are not religious may also believe that there are repercussions for wrongdoing. So in what way would somebody who doesn't believe in God believes that there are repercussions?
Well, instead of a divine tribunal, there might be a tribunal of the community of minds. I mean, if people can really know what our hidden thoughts are, what's really going on in our heart of hearts, we might be judged and even punished for things that we've thought. So people who take seriously the connectedness of all minds might, in some of their more reflective moments, worry about these non-deistic analogs to divine tribunals.
So they might think that, having these so-called bad thoughts, we talked about it could be a self-defeating behavior. They could alienate others somehow, or they could be made to suffer psychologically because of those thoughts, not tying it into any deity, but just like you mentioned, unseen forces at work, I guess, right?
Well, I think something we've talked about before on this program is one of the reasons people are so resistant to any talk about PK. Let's just talk about PK for a second. And the point I've made is that one of the things that's so potentially scary about PK is that if I can move, say, a matchstick just a millimeter by thought alone, it's a very small step conceptually from doing that to making somebody drop dead by thought alone. And once we take that seriously, I think we have to take seriously an entire magical worldview that most of us associate, usually condescendingly, only with so-called primitive cultures. It's a worldview according to which thoughts can kill or have other sorts of, if not lethal, certainly undesirable consequences, and in which we might have to be responsible for a whole range of things that we just assume be bystanders for. So, I mean, in everyday life, most of us don't like to think that if we have a nasty thought about somebody and that person has an accident, that we had something to do with it. We just as soon brush that off. But that's exactly the consequence of, I think, admitting PK into the universe. There could be all sorts of things going on under the surface, mind readings, psychic vendettas. Now, presumably it's not happening all the time. There's going to be an immensely complex causal network of psychic interests being expressed, and probably a lot of them cancel one another out. Probably a lot of intentions don't make it through this causal network. So it may be almost miraculous that some of our negative thoughts have any effect whatsoever. But, I mean, so there are people who say, well, if thoughts could kill, why are so many mothers alive today? You know, because most children have harbored nasty thoughts about their parents at some time or other. Yeah. Or we could say, why are children alive? Because parents have had nasty thoughts about their children.
Yeah.
So I don't think the picture is that simple, but I think that we need to take seriously the possibility that there could be these under-the-surface kinds of interactions that at least sometimes make a difference, and that some people might be psychically gifted or psychically afflicted.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really know what that landscape is like.
It's somewhat ironic. You know, we live in an age today that we're constantly talking about privacy issues, you know, on the web and corporations with data and stealing identity, but we could have been open books forever, and we remain so. It has nothing to do with data.
It could be. I mean, we don't know how extensive that is.
Yeah.
I think that's part of what's intriguing about this whole area.
And we're counting on you to figure it all out.
Hey, I'm retired now.
I don't think so. Your mind keeps going. We have been talking with Dr. Stephen Browdy. The book is Crimes of Reason on Mind, Nature, and the Paranormal. The website to learn a lot more about Stephen, the Jazz Philosopher website, also links to his professional academic website, so you can learn a whole bunch and learn more about his other books. Thanks so much for being with us, and we hope to see you soon.
Yeah, I do too. It's great talking to you both, as always.
Same here. Have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon Donna Mello, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel Skandarian, Jeanette Davies, Marianne Piergel, Julie Beischel, Barbara Patillo, Ann Hutchinson, David Haith, Rita Springer, Mark Barron, Vicki Steppi, Jean Lish, Tracy Lee Nash, Eddie Roll, James Rafferty, Arthur and Bernie Goforth, Joe, Andrea, Richard, Brian, Karen, David Mello, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Andrea O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Stanley Mullen, Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Eileen Lafata, Wendy Lippo, Barbara Russell, Tom Donahue, Tim Donahue, Doug Berry, and Philip McGee. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.